Okay, we continue in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf Dalet. We're now in Pasuk Yud Gimel, as David is speaking to Shaul, proving to Shaul that he has no evil intentions against him. So in Yud Gimel, he says, Kasher Yomar, and he just finished saying that I will not be the one to take revenge against you. Hashem will take revenge against you. On my behalf, but not I will not. And he continues with that theme. Kasher Yomar Mishal Hakadmoni Me Rishoyim Yetzei Resha V'yodi Lo Siyabach. So, as the Mishal Hakadmoni, we have to see exactly what that means. Mishal Hakadmoni, but basically it means the first or the old parable that says, from the wicked comes forth wickedness. So that's what they say. But yodi lo siyabach, but my hands will not be against you. So the Malbim explains, meaning to say, he says it's the Mashal HaRishon, the first allegory ever used, which was in the ancient days, in the days of Cain and Hevel, where Hashem took revenge for the blood of Hevel, who killed Cain. And how did he take revenge? How did Cain ultimately die? It was a great-great-grandson of Cain, right? Lamech, who killed Cain. Who killed Cain. If you recall, Tuval, I believe it was Tuval Cain and his son Lamech. These are already going a number of generations down. They were hunting in the fields. Tuval Cain was blind. And his son Lamech was instructing him how to... or maybe you mix up the names, whatever. He's instructing him how to shoot the arrow, etc., etc. I mean, Lamech, whatever. Anyway, he shot the arrow, thought it was an animal, and it killed Cain. So Cain was killed by someone else, even though it was unintentional. And that is the first allegory, the first mashal, the first example of where it means, Merishoyim Yetzei Resha. From the wicked comes out wickedness. And the Malbim says it's two intentions, meaning from the descendants of Cain who was wicked, Merishoyim, from the wicked comes out wicked. From Cain, the wicked, came out the wickedness, a great-great-grandson who killed him. And secondly, and he was killed through a Rasha just like him. So Merishoyim Yetzei Resha. From the wicked come out wickedness. So that's the original time. From the wicked person had a child who was wicked, a great-great-grandchild was wicked, and from that came out that he killed him.
The blind guy was wicked?
Or the one who, we're all wicked. All the descendants of Cain were wicked. Not, you know, so you're going to ask, was wicked by killing by accident? No. It was wicked anyway. It's wicked anyway. So if Hashem needs somebody to kill a wicked person, he finds a wicked person to do it, even if it's unintentional, which we'll see shortly. But still, yadi al tiyabach, but my hand shouldn't be on him. If someone has to get punished, so let him be punished by Hashem directly or by a wicked person, but it's not going to be through me. You deserve to get killed for the things that you've done. You deserve it. And Hashem will decide that you have to get killed. But Merishoyim Yetzei Resha, from the wicked people come forth wickedness, not from me. It's not my job to take revenge for me, and it's not even my job to take revenge for Hashem unless Hashem would tell me to take revenge for you. And so far, nowhere in this Torah does God allow me to kill you. Right? Especially after he was able to now cut the corner of his coat so I don't have to kill him. It's not my rights to kill him. So that's where the Malbim learns that pasuk. Rashi brings down from Chazal that the more classic one interpretation of Merishoyim Yetzei Resha, and that we learned in Maseches Makos. Those of us who could remember back to Daf Yudam Beis Maseches Makos. The Gemara over there in Makos says, what is the pasuk referring to when it says, Mishal HaKadmoni Merishoyim Yetzei Resha? It's speaking about two people who killed. One of them killed unintentionally, and one of them killed intentionally. Neither situation had witnesses for that. So what happens, Hashem brings the two of them to an inn, and the guy who killed unintentionally climbs up a ladder, and the guy who killed intentionally walks by, and the guy on top falls down and kills him. And this time there are witnesses, and therefore the one who killed intentionally gets killed finally, and the one who killed unintentionally also now will go to the city of refuge as he should have gone before. And that's what the pasuk means, even though he didn't plan on killing it, but it says asher lo tzidah, the guy wasn't planning on killing it. Velokim inot liyado, but Hashem brought it to his hands. The whole idea of killing bishoge, killing unintentionally, is that Hashem brought it to your hands. You weren't intending to kill the fellow, but Hashem brought it to your hands. So that's the idea. The guy who was supposed to get killed, Hashem brought it into the other person's hands who was supposed to kill the fellow. That's how it comes out. And that's why Hashem brings them together. That's the classic. That's why the Gemara brings this. Now, you got to remember, it's all has to be referenced to this story here, because this is the pasuk. The pasuk is here. Mir shreim yetzei resha. From the wicked comes out wickedness. And here we learn the halachas of, we understand the whole idea of the person who kills bishogeg. Person who kills bishogeg is brought, you know, so when a person kills unintentionally, Hashem wants that to happen. He wants that to happen because the person he's killing is someone who was supposed to be getting killed. Hashem evens up the score. Nobody gets, like we said before with the idea of nekama 2 days ago. Hashem evens up the score. Leave it to Hashem. Hashem inot liyado. But you've got to be, but Hashem will leave it to a wicked person to do that. So this is a classic example of Hashem inot liyado here. Hashem brought it into his hands. But this isn't by accident. In other words, David Amel, Hashem brought Shaul right into David's hands. Hashem inot liyado. And David had a million and one rationalizations to kill Shaul on the spot. It doesn't happen to only be inot liyado accidentally, but to give him a right to kill him right on the spot. But David says, I'm not going to do it because Mirishraim Yetzei Resha. From the evil people come, from the wicked people comes wickedness. So he says, and I'm not, and from both interpretations, in other words, the wicked person does the devil's work, as it were, and he's the one who ensures that the person who's supposed to get killed gets killed. Now, of course, the famous question has to be asked in the classic case that the Gemara Makkos brings. From wicked people come wickedness. The question is, wait a minute. Well, there it's talking about a person who killed intentionally and a person who killed unintentionally. Okay, so I understand the person who killed intentionally, I understand we call him a wicked person. He's a wicked person. But a person kills unintentionally, why are we calling him a wicked person? He wasn't planning on killing the person. He wasn't planning on killing the person. He was just shooting his arrows. So why is he called a wicked person? Why is he called a wicked person? And moreover, why does such a person go to a city of refuge? Why does he go to Nir HaMiklat? Was he so bad? So we talked about this in the past. You have to remember there's three levels. There's intentional, unintentional, and then accidental. Right? So accidental, person who kills accidentally, it's mamish an accident, it's out of his control, he doesn't go to Nir HaMiklat. He's not a Rasha. Person who kills intentionally, he's clearly a Rasha, and he has to get killed. Unintentional is somewhere in between, where there lies a bit of negligence, and a bit of not total negligence. If it's total negligence, he wouldn't go to City of Refuge either, because that couldn't be kapara for his aver. So, and the Rambam discusses this idea. Rambam discusses the difference between accidental and intentional. He gives the example of a person who's going up a ladder and then falls down. That is considered an accident. He doesn't go to Nir HaMiklat because it's so unusual for a person going up a ladder to fall down. And then the other example is going down a ladder. If you fall and kill someone, that's called unintentional, and you go to Golos. Because that already, it happens that people fall down a ladder when they're going down. He should have been more careful. He should have exercised more care. And that's why he goes to the city of refuge. And that person is not careful. And that person, the Gemara is telling us, is a Rasha. is a rasha. A person who doesn't take care where he should be taking care is a rasha. No different than if you're climbing a ladder, you're supposed to put that the red tape all around. Say men at work, danger. You have to put some precautions, put a couple barriers around. That's your job, to ensure that other people don't get hurt. And if you're not taking care, that means you don't care about other people's lives. You don't care about other people's lives. It'd be no different if a person is speeding like crazy speeding. A person is driving on the highway 200 kilometers an hour, you know, and then gets into an accident. We're not going to say that he's totally innocent. We're going to say the guy had certain degree of negligence. That if you're not supposed to drive 200 kilometers, don't give yourself much chance to get out of the way if there's a problem. And therefore, such a person would go into the city of refuge as well. And if you recall, the Gemara, it's this week's Parsha, right? It's Parsha Matos, right? I didn't get up to the Ma'aser Seder. I believe it's this week's Parsha. Is the killing, city of refuge. It is Parsha's Matos. The Gemara tells us, right? Where it tells us that the mother of the Kohen Gadol would feed all the people who are in the city of refuge. Would give them care packages. The Gemara says, why? So that they would not daven for the death of her son. Because the only way that they can return is through the death of the Kohen Gadol. So they daven for the death of the son. Where is that coming from? The answer is, because they know the only way they're going to get back is from the other Kohen. Since when do you daven for someone to die? Such that you should get out of the city of refuge. I mean, I'm saying the city of refuge isn't the greatest place to be, but that a Kohen should die on your account? Oh, that's what the Torah is telling you. When push comes to shove, it's me before the other guy. That's what a rush is. Torah is yored l'self daita. The Torah knows such a person. A person who kills unintentionally, not accidentally, unintentionally, he is a rasha. If you're so self-absorbed in your life that you're not even taking precautions that should have been taken to not kill somebody else, if there will be unintentional manslaughter, but from unintentional manslaughter will come intentionally wanting to kill him. And that's through the prayers of those people who will pray for the Kohen Gadol to die. Why he pray? And Chazal saying, if she did it, she knew they were praying for him to die. She wouldn't do it stamazoi. So once they get gifts already, their prayers won't be so intense. They'll take a little bit of the edge off of the prayers, so the prayers won't be so efficacious, and they won't succeed. But the Torah knows that the person who's not care of, doesn't give the total care necessary to not hurt human life. At the end of the day, it's coming from a very narcissistic place, which it's a me type of personality, and that person is a rasha. It's just a matter of time and an opportunity and situation till he'll ultimately kill somebody with his hands. That's what Chazal are teaching us. And therefore, David HaMelech is saying, Mirushayim Yetzei Rasha. From wicked people comes wickedness. Even the guy who kills unintentionally is a wicked person. Because it's you first. And you first, there's no end to you first. And that's what David HaMelech is saying here. Even though it was a case of Hashem Ino Liyado, Hashem brought him to my hands. Hashem has brought you to my hands. And I could have lots of reasons to say that I can kill you. But David HaMelech says, at the end of the day, if I don't have to kill you, I'm not going to kill you. I'm not going to define myself as right. It's not me first. And that's what he's teaching Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech is thinking me first. And Shaul HaMelech, unfortunately, did a lot of rishus came out of him. And David says, I'm not going to be that kind of a person. That's the message he's saying. No matter how terrible people are around you, and you can justify it in so many ways through rationalization, it's an act of rishus. An act of rishus is left for a rasha, not for me. Even if we're going to call it self-defense, I had another way out. Here, I cut your garment. That's it. I don't have to kill you. I saw some kiddush in you, whatever. I'm not going to do it. That takes tremendous tzidkus on his part. Okay. So now I continue your dalit. And then he finally says, Achrei bi yotza melech Yisrael. Who is the king of Yisrael going after already? Acharei mi ata rodev. Who are you chasing afterwards? Acharei kelev meis. After a dead dog? Acharei parosh echad, after one flea? So the Malbim explains, after he proved to him that it would not be right to kill him, and proves him everything that I don't really want to kill, etc., etc. So after proving that everything Shaul is doing is not logical, he just ends off and says, and in general, your whole chasing after me is a very foolish thing from the beginning, from the end. Because he's saying, you know, who is the king going after? I mean, you're the king, right? So who are you chasing after? In the past, that's a double expression. Who have you been going forth in the past? Rodef is present tense, is hover. Okay, see, Yotza is past tense, Rodef is present tense. It's interesting. Who has the king been, look at the diuk, who has the king been chasing after? And then he says, and who are you running after now? Look carefully. It's a double expression, number one. And number two, that the first clause is the past, second clause is the present. And number three, first clause calls him a king, this one doesn't call him a king. Calls him a tot. Do you see the three issues here? First of all, it's repetitive, saying the same idea twice. But the first time it's in past tense. I don't know if your English is picking up on this. And the second clause is in the present tense. And the first clause, he calls him a king. And now he doesn't call him a king. I'm just thinking of this as we're speaking. But that's really what David is really saying. When you started chasing after me, you were a king. You were a king. And it was not necessarily that he would have to stop being the king so quickly. Even though there's a prophecy that the kingship is going to be taken away. But we've already discussed, there's many ways the kingship could have been taken away. Shaul could have voluntarily handed it over. And he could have been, you know, it could have been two kings. There could have been the retired king, just like you have two Kohen Gadols. Right? You can have a Kohen, remember, we learned in Makkos, you can have three Kohen Gadols. You could have the old Kohen Gadol got a mum, but he still has a sort of status of a retired Kohen Gadol. If the Kohen Gadol Mashiach Hashem, the one who Mashiach Muhammad, the one who dresses in at battle, right? It's possible to have more than one Kohen Gadol. And that whole din of Ira Miklat depends on which Kohen Gadol dies. It's possible. It's not normal, but it can happen. You can have more than one Kohen Gadol at a time, so to speak. You only have one that's practicing. If you have one who was the temporary one, Kohen Gadol temporary, and still has a status, a very high status. So Shaul could have been the king emeritus. He could have always been a king. Till the day you died, you could have been a king. And when you started chasing after me, you were a king. You were a king. But in this process of chasing me, you've lost your kingship. Remember, when he killed the city of Nov, that put the nail on the coffin. Any excuses he had for whatever, he still could have done tshuva. Right? There's lots of opportunity to tshuva. But the tshuva opportunities ran out. Now you're not a king anymore. He's calling him not a king anymore. That's hinting to it. But it's clear. You're not a king anymore. And then he's saying, who are you running after? A kelev mace? A dead dog? So David is calling himself the dead dog. What's a dog? What's a dog? A dog is very trusted. A dog watches its master. Right? But since you distanced me away and now I have no purpose, in other words, I was very loyal to you. I was loyal like a dog is loyal. But now that you've pushed me away and I have no purpose in helping you, then I'm like I'm dead. If a person has a purpose, he's alive. If a person doesn't have a purpose, he's dead. Even though you're physically alive, you're dead. So I'm like a dead dog in terms of like I would love to be loyal to you, even now. But you've chased me away. I was so loyal, right? So that's going on the first clause. Who has the king been chasing after? And on the second clause, who are you running after now? He's saying, Acharei parosh echad, after one flea. Right? In other words, my strength is weakening. Right? And I'm like a flea who jumps from place to place because people are trying to catch him. Right? Want to catch him, want to kill a mosquito. He flies around. So I'm like a dead flea. I'm just jumping from place to place. So who are you even running after? What's worth your time? So with your time and effort, like, what's going to be the big prize at the end of the day? That you're wasting all your time? I mean, you have a nation that has to be protected from the Philistines. There's a lot more important things going on in your life. And who are you chasing after? A Gornish like me? That's what he's showing his humility over here. Let's just see if there's anything I missed over here. He's saying... Yeah. Oh, he also says it's you could have sent other people to do this work. It's not for your covet to do this. You know, yeah, send the CIA to kill me. Send the FBI. Send the special agents to do this. Right. But why you're spending your own time? This, of course, obviously, he was obsessed with all this. That's what got him so involved in this. Okay. Anyway, so that is the end of his discussion. Finished. Oh, one more pasuk. I'm sorry. Yeah?
Did Shaul think that Hashem wanted him to kill David? Did he think that
Joe
was rebelling?
Well, obviously he's acting delusionally. He figures he's supposed to kill him. He figures David is a threat. David is a threat.
And according to Torah law,
he heard a lot of Lashon Hara. You have to listen to the last about 10 lessons, 15 lessons. If you listen to it, you'll see. Enough people who were talking Lashon Hara about David. It was Makabal Lashon Hara. When you Makabal Lashon Hara, you can believe anything. Right? Tesvav. Last pasuk. V'hayah Hashem l'dayan v'shafat b'ini v'necha. Hashem should be the judge and the administer of justice between me and between you. V'yera v'yarev esrivi. Hashem should see and plead my case. V'yishpetein miyadecha. And should exact justice from your hands. How does the Malam explain this? He says there's two different jobs, a dayan and a shofet. And that there's a dayan and a shofet, a judge and literally a policeman, an officer. And there's a din and a mishpat. Din means a judgment, and mishpat is exacting the judgment. Which the courts give the judgment, and then the enforcers have to enforce the law. So when the people are pleading their cases, that's when you have a dayan, that's when you have a judge, and that's when you have to make a din. You accept the people's arguments, etc., etc. The mishpat is, okay, this is what the judgment is, and one has to act on that. So that's what David is saying. Hashem is going to be the judge and the one who exacts the judgment. Hashem will decide who's right and wrong, and Hashem will decide, you know, will enforce the punishment over here. And you'll see that Hashem is going to ultimately plead my case. He's going to see it's in my favor. And he'll have to do to you what he has to do to you. That's the best I can do. And that's what we talked again, nekama. Nekama is not that you take the nekama. If somebody hurts you, do you take nekama from him? No. So you let the guy just do whatever he wants you? No. So what do? You take him to a court. But isn't taking him to a court nekama? We said, no, it's not nekama. Because it is nekama. It's Hashem's nekama. It's Hashem's nekama. Taking a guy to court is saying, okay, Hashem wants to, we're going to see if Hashem wants to take nekama against you for what you did to me. You violated Hashem's Torah through me, so now you've gone against Hashem. Right? Somebody goes over to you and insults you and slaps you in the face and hurts you. He's done two things. He's hurt you. He's hurt Hashem. And Hashem told him not to do such a thing. So now you're taking him to court for the part between him and Hashem. That you have to do. So David HaMelech was saying the same thing. Yeah, Hashem's going to take the revenge. Hashem will be the judge. Hashem will give the justice. Let Hashem do all that. And I'm just pleading to Hashem, Hashem, please enforce the law as it should be for your covet, not for my covet, because I'm just a dog. I'm just a fly. We know David was very humble. David said, I'm but a worm. All the time, he always calls himself very low terms. So if he knows that way, a person like that doesn't need covet. If a person realizes everything you have is from Hashem, so what are you already? Everything you have is from Hashem. The fact that he can kill Goliath, the fact that he can kill Plishim. Where did that came from? It came from the strength that Hashem gave him. So Hashem gives you the strength. You're going to be arrogant about it? You're going to feel you have to uphold your covet? The only thing you know is there's God's covet. God's covet has to be upheld. So that I daven to Hashem, that Hashem should take care of his covet. Let him deal with it. It's Hashem's covet. He knows what to do. When Hashem will tell me to do something for his covet, I'll do it. Till he tells me I can't trust myself. I can't trust myself. I'm too subjective over here. If Yasser hasn't told me from the room to kill you, I'm not going to kill you. And it's up to Hashem. This tremendous sitkus on David's part here. Tremendous sitkus. I don't know if many people could have acted the way he acted. After everything, if you put everything that's gone into his life, all the injustice that's happened to him, and now he had Shaul on the ropes, Imam Hashem on the ropes, and let him go like that, and to make such a Kiddush Hashem, as Shaul himself will acknowledge, and that is really the greatest nekama. The greatest nekama says, the Gemara says, what? Greatest nekama? Because we say what? Kel nekama Hashem. What's the next half of the pasuk? Kael nekama. It's in the song of the day for today. Kael nekama Hashem. What's the rest of the pasuk? We'll remember it today. Kael nekama Hofia. The God of vengeance, Hofia, who will appear. He will appear. It's two clauses. Kael nekama Hashem. Hashem is the God of vengeance. Kael Nekamas Hofia, the God of Hashem who will appear, the God of revenge who will appear. So what's this? What did you add? You said Hashem is the God of vengeance. Finished. What I got to say? The God of vengeance who appears. You can say, well, it's poetic that his vengeance will appear. But I forgot who says this beautiful mashal, that there was once a king who was going through with his entourage, the parade, the city's giving him all kinds of covet, banners, this, that, long live the king, etc. And there's a young teenage boy who's a foolish kid. He said, I think I'll do something stupid, as many teenagers do. I'll take this rock and I'll throw it at the king. Yeah, for fun. Yeah, it's Tom Azoy. So he throws the rock, hits the king right in the nose. The king's nose is bleeding. The secret service is there. Ooh, what's going on? And quickly, right away, they catch the boy. Immediately. Bring him to the king. He says, look at this teenage. Look what he did. Your Majesty, we'll kill him forthwith. The king says, no, that doesn't show my greatness. What will be gained? What will be gained if I kill him? Rather, take him to the palace. Take him to the palace. Raise him like a prince. And we'll see. Saw this young juvenile delinquent of a teenager is brought to the palace. He's there for 4 or 5 years. They teach him all the etiquette of being a prince. They teach him scholarship, how to read. Kid was a boor. Teach him how to read. Teach him manners, sophistication, all the ways of. And he grows up and is doing good. 18, 19, whatever. One day he comes to the king. He starts crying. He falls to the floor. He's begging. He says, what's the matter? He says, Your Majesty, I now ask you for forgiveness for what I did 5 years ago. He says, what are you talking about? He says, 5 years ago, I didn't understand what a king was. I didn't understand who you were. I didn't understand anything. I was a juvenile delinquent. Now you've raised me to the point that I realize what I did was terrible. And the king says, this is the revenge I was looking for. This was the revenge I was looking for. The revenge where now what you did wrong appears to you. In other words, Hashem's, what does revenge mean? What does revenge really mean? Revenge doesn't mean you just kill the guy. What does revenge mean? As we explained yesterday, revenge means it's not possible that you could live a minute in your life thinking that God's not the king. Right? You do an aver, nothing's going to happen. Well, something's got to, it cannot be that you didn't have very get away with this. Jewish people thought they could have sinas chinam, and Hashem's not going to do anything. I go to shul, I bring my korban in the base magdish, I give a nice big korban every day, I give my money to the shul, I pay my dues, I give tzedakah, I do this, I learn, I do this, I do that, everything. But I have sinas chinam. So when I'm doing, when I'm insulting my workers, and I insult my wife, that part Hashem doesn't look at. That part Hashem doesn't look at. Because I go to shul and I do this and I learn and I do this. So Hashem says, it's not possible. It's not possible you're going to get away with that. Kel nekamas Hashem. There has to be revenge. What's the point of revenge? To realize that Hashem is the boss all the time. And the only way that happens is you're going to have to get punished. You're going to have to get punished. Or not. There is one other way. The other way is, how can you avoid it? give God the greatest revenge that he wants. What's the greatest revenge that Hashem wants? Is that you do tshuva. If you do tshuva, now what hurts more? What really, doing tshuva hurts? Hurts badly. Right? Really, you know, 20 steps of tshuva, Ben Yonah. One of them is, you know, you're crying. Klima, and shame, embarrassment. Psychological trauma comes through tshuva. Right? Admitting that you're wrong and understanding what you did was so bad. The young teenager, now he's 18, he's so embarrassed. He can't look at the king. How could I have done such a thing? Now, isn't that a productive revenge? All we want is that boy to know that I didn't get away with anything 5 years ago. That's all. That's all he has to know. He didn't get away with anything. The king could have killed him 5 years ago, for sure. He wouldn't have gotten away with anything. But what would the kid have gained? And what kind of benevolent king would do such a thing? Because then the king's only worried about his covet. True, he has to have his covet. But isn't there a better way for the king to maintain his covet and yet not have to kill a constituent? Teach him how to respect what a king means. Let him cry. Let him see himself. Kael Nekamos Hofia. Let the God of revenge appear. In other words, the kid, the person who did, the Avera, that God that he is hurting, it didn't appear to him to be God. But when he appears, that's the greatest revenge. That's the greatest revenge. And this is what David HaMelech really is doing over here. That's what he's doing. He could have killed Saul, and that would have been a revenge. It would have been Hashem's revenge. He would have been the tool to do revenge for Hashem. He says, wait a minute, there must be a better way. I don't want to be a Russia. Let it be Kael Nekamos Hofia. Let it just appear. Let Saul HaMelech himself see that he's wrong and that he can't get away with anything. That's what David is trying to accomplish. That is a real king, you see? David is going through all this because this is just nisyonos to see, is David really worthy? Is he going to be worthy for that anointment? Shmuel anointed him. He's going to be the king. Is he going to be a good king or not a good king? This is where he's going to learn how to be a king. To take the greatest enemy he ever has, is Saul HaMelech. And to show Kael Nekamos Hofia, not Kael Nekamos Hashem alone. And that's what David HaMelech was able to accomplish over here. So now we go to Pasuk Tezayin. Okay, it's mamish beautiful. Vayehi kechalos David ledaber es hadvarim ha'ele el Shaul. And it was when David finished saying his words to Shaul. And you can imagine the shock of Shaul. I mean, it's information he has to process immediately. You know, remember, he's coming from a schema that David's out to get him, and he's terrible, and this and that, and he's built up a case against David. He's already killed out a city because of David. And all of a sudden, he's hearing David's voice from the cave that he just was in, and he knew what compromised position he was in. He knew what could have happened to him. And it's all coming within, like, how long did it take David to say this? 2 minutes? Now, this is a tremendous shock to Shaul's system. So when they finish, Vayomer Shaul, Shaul says, Hakol Chazeh Bini, David. Is this your voice, my son, David? Look at the words of affection. Vayisa Shaul Kolo Vayevk. Shaul raised his voice and cried. Yitzai, Vayomer El David, he says to David, Tzadik Ato Mimeni. You are more righteous than me. You have repaid me with kindness, with goodness. And I repaid you with evil. Right? So the Malbim explains that he confessed that he transgressed. Hodolo alho avar shetzadiku bidino, that David was the tzaddik in this judgment. Right? You have given me good. Look what you've done. You killed Goliath. You fought against the Plishtim. Right? And the tremendous love you had for me, and you're always looking out for my benefit. And what did I do? I only wanted bad. I had anger. And he says, he's spalos anefesh be'eva v'sinas chinom. Mom's, you know, wouldn't just gratuitous. He says, I had sinas chinam to you. Sinas chinam, baseless hatred. He admitted that I had sinas chinam, baseless hatred. That came from being makabel, a lot of lashon hara about David HaMelech. Right, that's sinas chinam. And that's when you think you can start killing people. Right, that's where in the 3 weeks. So the whole 3 weeks are about. That's what all 3 weeks are about. Hashem wants Kael Nekama Sophia. Do you think Hashem likes bringing a situation in the world where non-Jews destroy temples and kill millions of Jews? Do you think Hashem likes that? But there has to be Nekama. Hashem's long and merciful. He waited 420 years, 410 years, two Batei Mikdashes. Hashem is long and merciful, but eventually Nekama has to come. Has to come. And don't you think Hashem would have much rather preferred that the Jews would do massive tshuva? Would have been so much better, right? And Shaul admits it was my sinas chinam. It was my sinas chinam that was wrong. Now, can you imagine how embarrassing? Now, Shaul has to admit this in front of everybody. This isn't so different. You know, the expressions is very close to the expression when Yehuda confessed to Tamar. Right? Yehuda thought that Tamar was acting immorally, and it turned out that Yehuda was the one involved with her. And he used the word tzadka mimeni, tzadka mimeni. She was more righteous than me. Here's a tzadikata mimeni. Takes a lot to confess. So this at least was a moment, I mean, you know, where Shaul at least was confronted with the truth and at least admitted it. It continues in Yitches. Vata, he got it to hayom, es asher asisi tova. And now you have told me today, asher asisa iti tova, that you did with me a goodness. Esha says, Sigrani Hashem biyodcha, how Hashem handed me over into your hands, the lo haraktoni, and you did not kill me. Okay, so, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Malvim says, talking about the past. In the past, you were as good to me, and I talk about the present. You even giving me good in the present. And he says to him, I'll read a line from the Malvim. He says, Da ki ha'apol ha'shalem va'tov b'muchlad. A perfect activity and something that's ultimately good is a omed lenes amim, will be as a banner for all the nations of the world. When you do a complete perfect act, that becomes a role model for all of history. He says like this, beautiful few lines of Malbim. He says, this is what Shaul was saying. Yasa Adam Masa Tov. Person does something that's good. Shiravim Yalam Dumenu, that many will learn from this person. Lasos come on, do like him. That's teaching the masses a beautiful way to behave. He will not only give you rewarded for what he did this time. He will get continuous reward that renews itself in every generation. Why? Because whenever a person is going to learn from that person to act in the same way, Yisyaches hatov el misha harob rishona will be attributed this goodness to the one who taught it first. Ulufiza comes out aschar b'shaito, the reward he gets at his time. Yikabel ba'ad hapeul batza, you get rewarded for the good thing you do now. Vaschar hamatmid yikabel ba'ad ma shemafarnes as hamayis v'lam de'rabim, and the future reward that's consistent will be as this becomes publicized and people learn from this. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, you have informed today. You have publicized this publicly because it's in front of everybody here. That which you did good to me. Even though you were really, according to the law, you could have killed me. But this now becomes a merit for generations. You see, it's a fantastic vort that Shaul is saying over here. He's saying, you've done for me a good, and it's going to be something that all generations are going to learn from. And you'll see shortly, there's a number of chazal that now make a lot of sense with this idea. But you understand, see, David understood it's not just me. It's not just me. My own personal vendetta is one thing. But there's something that all of mankind can learn from what I'm in a situation. It's again, David, the king always never thinks of himself first. He's always thinking of everybody before himself. And it's not just Shaul. He's thinking about to his children, his grandchildren, every single Jew, who today are learning this story today, and if anybody who's listening to what's going on, anyone through the various technical ways, will be inspired by David HaMelech, and will not take revenge on somebody when they're not supposed to, it's going to be a merit for David HaMelech till today. It's a schus for David HaMelech. Makes David HaMelech more powerful. Even now. Still David HaMelech chai v'kayom. He's alive and he's standing forever. You can imagine how many schools, you know, learn Sefer Shmuel. How many children hear about this? How many people learn that no matter what a person says to you, you know what, you don't have to take revenge. And Shaul saying this is going to be a great, great schus for you for generations. And that's why ultimately David's going to be the king in Shaul. There's very little we can learn from Shaul, unfortunately. The only thing you can learn from Shaul is how not to act. And that's what he admits to everybody.
At the end, however, what he's saying, Shaul, that we should learn from him.
Well, to admit his mistake,
and
you know.
How he presents.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens shortly. Let's continue your test. And when a person finds his enemy, and sends him in a good way, that's what's going to happen. That's going to be the mussar. People are going to learn from you. Right? This righteousness is going to learn for generations. So whenever that happens, whenever a person will find his enemy and will send him away because of learning from you, what will happen? Vashem yishalem chatova. Hashem will pay you back good. That's the way the Malbim explains it. Tachas hayom hazeh, in the place of this day, asher asisa li, which you did to me. Every time a person acts like you and learns from you, you're going to be rewarded for that. And that's why he says in Pasuk Chav, v'atoy, and now hine yodati, behold I know, ki maloch timloch, you surely will rule. V'kama biyotcha mamlechas Yisrael, and the kingdom of Israel will be upheld in your hand. And the Malbim says, in other words, because I see we're able to conquer Yetzirah until this level, I know, ki maloch timloch. Because, what's the double expression? Because a person, who do you have to first be a king over before you're a king over others?
Yourself.
You have to be king over yourself. Ki maloch timloch. Ki maloch, because you were a king over your Yetzirah, now, timloch, you will rule. You are worthy of ruling. And it will remain forever, not like me, says the Malbim, who the kingdom was taken away from me. But yours will be forever. And now you understand why, based on what we said before, it'll be forever, because forever people will learn from your action, and will copy your action, and that will bring merit for you. And that's what the Yalkut Shimoni says also, Maloch Timloch, Maloch Balam Azeh, Timloch Balam Aboh. You'll be a king in this world and a king in the world to come. What do you mean, a king in the world to come? Because even though you died, David, your effect of being a king, you still rule. What's the idea of being a king? A king gives orders, people listen. A king gives orders, people listen. He's Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. That's what a king's job is, plain and simple. So even when you die, you'll still be a king. And you'll still be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Because every child who reads this story and will learn to control his anger and will be a king like you, is going to be a merit to you forever and ever and ever. And that's why your kingdom will remain forever. Mine won't. You're supposed to be a king even after you die. The impact you have is unbelievable. And one final thing, Chazal say, and he had a Kabbalah. Remember when Shmuel gave him the words and says, you will no longer be the king after Baal Molech? He turned around and what happened? Shaul grabbed his coat and ripped it. And he says, just like you ripped my coat, your kingdom will be ripped. Chazal said there was also a hint, and he said, and you'll know when your kingdom has gone into whom, because someone will rip your coat. That person will rip. Now you understand. Now, he probably didn't understand that when he heard it before. What do you mean he's going to rip my coat? Now you understand. He ripped your coat, and you understand he's supposed. You're not even going to fight him. You know he's supposed to be the king. You know that he's supposed to be the king because he knew how to take God's nekama and not his nekama. And then you learn from me how to confess he is with the king. Okay, we didn't quite finish. We'll finish that up tomorrow. And don't bring in a new story. Unbelievable.